Welcome to the Magnolia Room, session one. And we'll go ahead and get started so our guest speakers will have all the time that they need for this. I'm just going to read the introduction. I don't know any other way to do this kind of thing, but it's you're looking for it on your notebook. It's page 22 for notes in your book. And we're audio recording this session. So if you have questions or comments, we are asking the presenters to repeat the question before you answer it so that it will be there in the recording. And so our session today will be held by Mike Flink and Emily Fitzpatrick. Mike is the Executive Director of Ministry Ventures. Ministry Ventures is an organization dedicated to helping develop leaders and build greater capacity in the nonprofit community. Mike earned his BA degree in economics from Taylor University, where his academic focus was in the field of economics. He's a numbers guy. And he has acquired multiple insurance and securities licenses and began his financial advisory practice at age 19. And Emily Fitzpatrick is a director of client services and coach with Ministry Ventures. Prior to joining Ministry Ventures, Emily spent 10 years as founder and executive director of an anti-trafficking organization serving sexually exploited teen girls. She was a founding member of the North Carolina Governor's Human Trafficking Commission and an expert speaker with the U.S. Department of State International Information Program. And then the question is, are you fundraising revenues are static and declining? Are they static and declining? Mike and Emily are going to help you identify and fix five common mistakes. Welcome them and come to share.
Thanks, everybody. My experience as a financial advisor actually led me here. I worked with a firm called Ronald Blue & Company, and I was fascinated. Our focus was on wealthy evangelical families, and almost the statistics say only 2% the average Christian gives 2%. Most of my clients were tithing, but some of them were just giving with great generosity. And I became the board chair of Fellowship of Christian Athletes in Atlanta, and I was so frustrated because we were struggling to raise money. And the retired Seeing Eye Dog Foundation had all this loot, and here we were doing all this great ministry, and we didn't. And I came to realize that our perspective on fundraising needed a shift. And it took me on an odyssey. I became really fascinated with why some of my clients were so outrageously generous. And before I knew it, I had joined a nonprofit called Ministry Ventures and later became executive director. Emily here is the one you really want to hear from. She's the one that's been doing it for the longest time. And go ahead, Em.
Well, I'm excited to be with y'all. First, I want to say I'm getting over bronchitis, so I have lots of congestion. So if I use my tissue, just ignore it. So, I am with Ministry Ventures. I've been here about 3 years. I did work in the anti-trafficking space, which is why I have a huge love for what you guys do. Worked with a lot of young women and teenage girls with addiction and all kinds of issues, and did it for 10 years. And the Lord just, I thought I would do it forever, and he called me out. And I just want to say, like, a big high five to you guys, because I know what you all deal with every single day. And I know you wear a lot of hats, and I'm just really, I feel just privileged to be here and be part of what you guys do at Teen Challenge in a small way. And let me kick us off in prayer. Do you guys mind? So, Lord, I just thank you. I thank you for these leaders. I thank you that you've given them a heart in tough times, Lord. God, our world just needs you so, so much. Lord, I just ask that you bless them. I ask that you give them an abundance of all they have need of, whether that's rest, whether that's time with you, whether that's time with family, whether that's time just learning how to be a better leader or a better fundraiser. God, whatever it is that they have need of, I pray that you provide that. I pray that they leave here, Lord, just full to overflowing, that they can walk out of this place different than when they came. So, Lord, be with us today. Be with Mike and I as we just share some information and some tips, Lord, and we just praise you and we love you in Jesus' name. All right.
Well, just want to say thank you. Obviously, you can see this isn't in presentation mode. We've now tried two laptops. The good news is the Lord did allow this laptop and the projector to work together. We appreciate your forbearance. This slide's going to look a little bit smaller than it otherwise would have, but I know y'all will roll with it. The other thing I want to ask is, if you are an executive director, would you raise your hand? All right, wow, we got a lot. If you're a development director or if you're a development staff member, but you aren't the executive director, would you raise your hand? Okay. If you're involved in fundraising in some way for your organization, would you raise your hand? Okay, this is pretty much everybody in this room. If you aren't, you probably aren't really in ministry. All right, so hopefully today, what do we want to see? We want you to be encouraged and get some takeaways. I prayed this morning that everybody would get something today that they'd be able to use next week. Okay, so hopefully there's going to be something here that you would be able to act on. And so let's just jump in with it. The first mistake that we see many ministries make is they don't have enough megaphones. What do we mean by that? And we mean by that that your closest investors, your board members, your key volunteers and givers are hesitant to tell your ministry story to others in their network. Have any of y'all ever felt that way? Yeah. If you haven't felt that way, I'm impressed. And it's not all of them, but have you ever wondered why that is? Somebody that may give a lot to you but seems hesitant to introduce? Is it because they don't believe in your organization? Is it because they're too busy? Is it because they're not sure how to tell your story? We all want to go from this to this, right? Lots of megaphones. And one of the best ways to do that is to develop a way to tell your story and empower others to do it, and to do it in a consistent way. Have you ever been in front of somebody where they told a story, and then you met somebody else from their organization or their family, and they told the story almost the exact same way, and it was just so confidence-inspiring, right? Because you just heard it over and over and over again, and it's not a memorization thing, but they get it. We want to encourage everybody here to rethink your elevator pitch. And so what are some ways that you can do that? The first is what we call the one-word pitch. Can you reduce your brand down to one intriguing word? The Twitter pitch, can you reduce your... Now, Twitter's getting longer, so, you know. But the Twitter pitch, can you reduce your message down to 140 characters? Every one of Steve Jobs' pitches fit within this size. When he first described the iPod, he described it as 1,000 songs in your pocket. So, you know, what is your ministry's Twitter pitch? Next is the question pitch. Can you form your key idea or your key subject into a question? You know, maybe it's a question your ministry's wrestled with and then has decided to answer. The question focuses on your why. Should I care about your ministry space? So there's a ministry in Birmingham. I'm based in Birmingham, Alabama. There's a ministry based in Birmingham that's really passionate about helping people find their purpose. And it's called the 210 Project. And their question pitch is, what would America look like if every Christian had a clear life purpose and mission and lived it out? And so what's that question for you? So Ministry Ventures, what's our pitch? There are over 1.5 million charities and ministries in the United States. It's 5 times more than the number of churches in our country. And many of these amazing causes are underfunded and under-resourced. We're compelled to help them build their cause by coaching them in proven practices. So we want to keep it nice and short. We're going to try to, if you have questions, if you just jot them down, we're going to leave at least 10 minutes at the end for questions, so just know that. Em, why don't you share with us the second?
So I wanted to start with a quote. Have you guys heard of Henry Nouwen? Okay, all right, awesome. So fundraising is a very rich and beautiful activity. It is a confident and joyful and hope-filled expression of ministry. In ministering to each other, in ministering to each other, each from the riches that he or she possesses, we work together for the full coming of God's kingdom. So we work together for the full coming of God's kingdom. So I would just like to see, by show of hands, who at this time in this season feels like fundraising is a very rich and beautiful activity? have two. Yay. Awesome. Awesome. So that's one thing that we really try to help our ministry leaders with at Ministry Ventures is to help you see this as a rich and beautiful activity. I want to say, before we talk about not outgiving your givers, when we talk about money, money is, it can be taboo depending on how you're raised. And let me kind of unpack that for a minute. So my mom raised me as a single teenage girl for many years, and she was a single woman raising me and my brothers as teenagers, and she would tell me, don't depend on a man for anything. You go out, you make your money, you get your degree, and you don't depend on a man for anything. Of course, we were not walking with the Lord in those years. So my view of money as a young kid growing up and into my adulthood was, you don't ask. Okay, so what did God call me to do in ministry? Ask. How hard do you think that was for me? Why do you think it was? Pride. Pride. I've got this. I don't need to ask anybody. I can do it myself. So I want you to think today, as we continue to unpack these five mistakes, what is your view of money? How do you view money? How was it talked about around the dinner table at your house? Was it celebrated? Maybe your family was generous and they gave, and you, when you meet with that businessman who you know can write you a $20,000 check on the spot, and he says no thanks, and you walk away angry, he wasn't raised that way. Money, you know, that scripture says where your treasure is, there your heart will be, right? In Matthew. So mistake number two, what we see a lot, is not outgiving your givers. So the impression you may be leaving behind is that this is transactional versus relational. I need your money. Write me a check. Yes, thank you. Praise God. We keep moving. That's cool. You'll get a lot of one-time gifts that way. And you won't have partners that'll sustain and have long-term relationships, because you're treating them like an ATM machine. Has anybody been guilty of this, or just me? I feel like we all have. And it's not that we want to treat people like ATM machines. It's that we're all busy, right? We are all extremely busy, wearing many hats, and we forget that fundraising is a ministry. We're so caught up in ministering to the people that we serve that we forget that our donors need ministry too, right? So according to statistics, 65% of givers do not make a second gift. 65% do not make a second gift. I see a lot of nonprofits that have a huge problem with donor retention. It's easy to go out when you bring your graduates into a church and you tell these Holy Spirit, you know, powerful stories and people's writing their checks. The hard part is what to do next, how to sustain, how to keep them. So 80% said they would make a second gift if they received a prompt, meaningful thank you letter, and additional communication. This is important, how the gift was being used. When you send your thank yous, first of all, do it soon, like within 48 hours. Have someone on your team paying attention to donor care. Get these thank yous out and reconfirm the gift. Your gift was used for XYZ. And don't ask again in that thank you, right? We want to nurture these relationships. So reconfirm the gift, get a prompt thank you out. We want to focus on donor retention, donor care.
Thank before you bank.
Yep, that's a good thing. So thank before you bank, Mike said. So invest big in your givers' lives by doing the little things intentionally. We have created a landing page for you guys. Ministryventures.org is our website. Just put /teen challenge. We've uploaded some free resources there. One of these resources is called the Little Things. I mean, I think there's like 40 or 50 little things that you can do to invest in your donor's life. So check that out.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Your board is bored. We need to create an environment which board members can thrive rather than just survive. If board members are only thinking about the meeting, they're not going to add much value, okay? So I think about Ministry Ventures and our board. We have a fabulous board. We have an amazing board. What's the best case scenario for a board member? The best case scenario for a board member is what I refer to as a really proud grandparent, okay? So they cannot wait to whip out a picture of their grandchild and show it to you, okay? So in the same way, a board member, they don't wake up in the morning wondering if things are getting fed. So operations, that's obviously our job here in this room, okay? But we need to equip them with those pictures that they can whip out and show other people. We need to give them the energy and stay connected to them so that they are excited and that they cannot wait to share with other people. They don't have the responsibility in the same way that we do for the day-to-day operations. And if that is your story in your organization, then you probably need to reevaluate some things. Staff members should operate the ministry. Board members should be guardrails to the ministry. So how can you do this? Help them by giving them fuel to keep them fired up. Go to the landing page. There's a Help, I'm a Board Member ebook. You can read it. You can share it with them as well. Definitely something you'd want to check out. Free resource. The fourth one, you may not be addressing two crucial questions for your givers. And the first one is, can I trust them with my donation? Everybody's asking this question in the back of their mind. And there may be some people that will actually give to you that they don't fully trust your organization, but if they trusted you, they'd add a zero to their gift. The next is, why don't ministries work together more often? So they're in a landscape in your community, other ministries operating. Donors sometimes are curious, why is it that these people work together? So the first question, do I, you as a ministry leader, really understand the heart and the passion of this person? And did I address the stewardship question? So questions like this, this is why you should consider getting an audit done, a compilation audit, or a full audit. Some people are really driven by the financial. This is why you want to submit to having policies and procedures. And oftentimes as ministry leaders, we just want to be free in the spirit to do the things that we feel God's leading us to do, and that's not a bad thing. But sometimes there can be a crisis of belief amongst those that are potentially giving to us. Another thing sometimes that we as ministry leaders can fall prey to is that something will start working in our organization and we'll start doing more of that without realizing sometimes it's a little bit of a drift from our mission, and then we can redo that again in another year or two and again, and then before we know it, our donors are like, what are we doing here? And it can be very confusing. So then the second is, have you differentiated yourself enough from other organizations? What's your key distinctive? So we talk fundraising when it's done right does not start with the problem. Doesn't start with the solution, because we all live in the solution. We're the solution to the problem. So we tend to start with the solution. The first thing that you need to do when you're talking to a prospective donor, though, is get them pregnant on the problem. They need to be emotionally pregnant that there's a problem. Okay? And then once they understand the problem, you move to the solution. And then the last is you talk about your key distinctive. So in a landscape of folks that are working to address this problem, of which your solution is one of them, what's your key distinctive? How is it that you're different than those others? And then also, are there ways that you can celebrate and connect with and network other like-minded ministries? Sometimes if we're honest, we can view folks that are operating in or near our space as competitors, but donors love it when we can figure out ways to work together. Building that trust is important.
All right, so mistake number five, are you consistently working on the ministry and not just in the ministry? So just by a show of hands, let's say, how many of you spend at least 5 hours a month working on the ministry, meaning you're reviewing policies and procedures and best practices? Good, 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 good. How many of you guys actually have a written funding plan? A formalized funding plan? I see one. Formalized, kind of.
Most of us spend a lot of time, well, not most, but many of us spend a lot of time on the detail for the budget for the expenses, okay? So we know how we're gonna spend the money. But the written funding plan is the detailed plan for how we're gonna go get the money we're gonna go spend. And so oftentimes when I see the budget, I'll see like three lines. There's church gifts, there's individual gifts, there's corporate gifts or foundations, maybe there's four lines. But then how we're going to get to those sometimes is kind of murky. And then there's, you know, 50, 60 lines in the bottom of the budget in terms of how we're going to spend the rest of the money. Having a written funding plan helps answer that question.
Right, exactly. So I encourage you, as you're thinking about funding plan, get some help with it. You want to set SMART goals. You know, what are you going to do to raise $150,000 in church gifts? Okay, we'll send a newsletter. Okay, what else? You know, you want to craft these plans out. There's something that if you just Google Ministry Ventures Donor Care Plan, you will find a sample donor care plan on the web that we've posted, and it's a PDF, and it will allow you to set and plan out every month how many touches you're going to give a donor. We recommend 7 touches between any ask. Now, I know that's a lot. That's a lot. I mean, if you can get 3, just think of this. Think of your best donor. How many times have you spoke with them this year? Once, twice? Think if you amp that up a little bit, maybe 5 or 6 times. And it can be just a call. It can be a text. And we're talking about this in a way, you know, I've had to do tons of fundraising. Mike, we have coaching, which I'm going to tell you about in a minute, but Mike has to fundraise. You know, 50% of our revenue comes from donors. And so, Mike, I would just like, while I have you, because you're our fundraising guy, before we dig into more about the coaching, I would like to just kind of pick your brain a little bit about your week. Like, how do you, as a fundraiser, like, how many touches, how do you spend your week? How are you raising the money that we need at Ministry Ventures, practically?
Sure. Well, that's a good question. Like she said, our budget is roughly half fees from our activities and half donations. And over the years, the donor has seen the work that we do. But people say that funding follows vision. And there's some truth to that. You know what funding follows? Asking. I try to be really intentional to create opportunities to share the story of what Ministry Ventures is doing. And I ask myself 3 questions every day. I'm going to mention this a little bit in the next session, so if you're in the next session as well, you might hear this twice, but it's really important, and so jot these down. The first question I ask myself every day is, do I still believe that a ministry leader being engaged with Ministry Ventures is one of the best things that could ever happen to them in their ministry? So the version of this that you ask yourself at Teen Challenge is, do I still believe that someone trapped in addiction being connected to our ministry would be one of the best things that could ever happen to them? Okay, so that's the first question you got to ask yourself. The next question I ask myself is, do I still believe that it would be a blessing for a prospective donor to hear the story of what God's doing at Ministry Ventures and be given a chance to respond? So you got to ask yourself that question about your organization. Do I still believe that Teen Challenge in North Atlanta, hearing the story of what God's doing there, would be a blessing to that donor? Regardless of whether they choose to give or not, it would bless them to hear what God's doing. All right, third question. Do I still believe that it's one of the best things that could happen for our ministry for that person to give? So we don't have an endowment that funds our entire ministry. You're probably not going to be in this room if there's an endowment that fully funds your ministry. And so what's God's funding plan for our organization? Does it involve asking? And then specifically, are you called to be a part of that? So there's 2 parts to that. The first question is, do I believe that it's God's plan for Ministry Ventures to be funded by fundraising? And then the second part is it my job to be a part of that? So the first day that I answer no to any one of those questions is my last day at Ministry Ventures. If I don't believe that we're a blessing to the people that we're called to serve, I'm done. If you don't believe, if you have a crisis of belief in your organization, either fix it or quit. Okay, so then the next question is, people ask me all the time, Mike, I mean, you know, like, it's just, I feel like I'm begging. And I used to think that too, okay? I grew up as a missionary kid in China, watched my parents in ministry and celebrated what they were doing, saw lots of different things. When I was a wealth manager, got to be on the other side of these conversations, doing a lot of giving and encouraging others to do that. And that's also fun. When I started, I thought, man, this side of the table is not nearly as much fun as the other. But you know what? I've come to learn that this is a blessing. That Proverbs 11:25 says, a generous person will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. Okay, so we are literally inviting other people into an opportunity to be refreshed. Okay, so this is a good thing for them. Regardless of whether or not they choose to give, and the statistics say, this is fascinating, less than 2% of people that are asked by email are going to give. Less than 9% of people that are asked by phone are going to give. 11% of people in a group. 19% of a letter and a phone call together will give. 43% of people that are asked face-to-face in a personal way will give. My experience is that people actually will see a higher rate than that when they do it in a way where they're prayed up, they've prayed for the person, they're well prepared, and they ask. You know, I would say about half the time when I meet with someone, they give. And so for those that don't give, I still feel like I offer them a chance to be blessed, and I still care for them. And it's really interesting. I try to schedule, and my team holds me accountable to this, 3 donor care interactions every week and 2 new donor interactions with every week. And so there are 3 really godly folks in Christian history that had 3 really different fundraising philosophies, all from, I guess it was the 19th century, I think. So the first would be George Mueller. So George Mueller neither told people about the need nor asked them to give. He, of course, what did he, as ministry leaders so often, that we're like, yes, let's do that. Don't have to ask. That's me. But what we forget is just the amount of time in prayer that George Mueller invested each day. And then also his best friend, William Booth, was also kind of his hype man, okay? So William was out there telling people about all kinds of needs and inviting people to get excited about what was happening in Bristol. And so I don't mean to take anything away from how God answers prayers, because I'm so grateful that he made this laptop work today. Amongst many other things, prayer requests that he's answered. But Don't tell people about the need, and don't ask. I know of 2 ministry leaders that I've walked with in the last 8 years that I would consider to be in that bucket that have funded ministries. And so I would say there are absolutely people that God calls to do that. But having worked with hundreds, perhaps pushing close to 1,000 ministries, it's a small percentage, okay? So the next is Hudson Taylor. So Hudson Taylor told people about the vision, okay? So he told people about the need, but he didn't specifically ask, okay? So he cast big vision, but he didn't ask. And then lastly, D.L. Moody. Okay, so D.L. Moody told people about the need, and he asked. And I would say that in almost every meeting that I have with a prospective donor, I tell them about the need. And about maybe half of them I specifically ask. And my goal, just as an aside, is to get with them for a meal or a coffee if I can. If it's better just to get to their office, that's okay too. And here's what I do, okay? I want to have them talk pretty much the entire time. I want to have finished my meal before they've even had a chance to have 2 or 3 bites, okay? There's 2 reasons for that. One of the greatest gifts we can give people today, now that we have cell phones and all this other stuff, is our full attention, okay? And you have an opportunity to make somebody feel interested and cared for when you listen to them, okay? So I eat and listen. And you know what's cool is eventually I'm done eating and they're like, man, I gotta eat. And that's my time, okay? And so if I got an hour with them, I want to have Ministry Ventures stories so clearly ready to share that I can do it in 10 minutes, okay? 10 minutes. 10 minutes feels like an eternity to me now, okay? Like, it's awesome. It's like I can do so much in 10 minutes. And so I get to share the story and then invite them to respond. And one of the last things that I usually say to people, is I'll share a specific need, and then I'll say, this is a really powerful phrase, write this down. Will you help me? Will you help me? So we want to see 40 pregnancy centers get fully funded in the next year, which will see 1,000 abortion-minded moms make life-affirming choices. And that'll echo in eternity. Will you help me? And then you just wait for a response. And you've just asked them something really important. So don't say anything. Let them think. It's going to feel like a really long time, okay? Especially when you just start, okay? If you're one of those people that silence feels awkward to you, I used to be one of them, just don't say anything. If you have to, count to like 60 in your head. You've just asked them to do something really important, which is to consider whether or not they'd like to get involved with your ministry. Pay them the respect of giving them a chance to think. So I literally count to 60 in my head. And most of the time I don't make it to 60. Have made it to 60 a couple times. If I make it to 60, what I say is, I know that I've just invited you to do something and consider something that's really important and that you want to give some thought to. Would it be all right if I followed up with you in 2 days? Okay, you don't need to give them a week. They don't need a week to pray about whether they're going to get involved in your ministry. They're not moving across the country. They're not moving to China. Like, a week, they're going to have forgotten about it by then, okay? They're going to have had 100 other conversations. Do not give people a week unless they specifically ask for it. Don't suggest a week. That's a terrible idea. 24 hours, 48 hours, okay? And then, so, assuming I hear back from them, either in that moment or sometime in the next 24 to 48 hours, then the next thing that I do is I summarize our conversation in an email. And I'll just say, hey, I just want to say thank you so much for your commitment to get involved in Ministry Ventures. And sometimes they'll be specific around what their gift intent is, and sometimes they won't. So if I ask them for $5,000 and they said, yes, I'll do that, in the email I always say, thank you for your commitment of $5,000. Okay? So we got a few minutes left here. I'm going to tell you one last story. All right. There's a man in Birmingham who there's a wing of the museum named after. I met with him, and he gave $20,000 to Ministry Ventures 2 years ago, $20,000 to Ministry Ventures a year ago, and I met with him 2 weeks ago. And he's an amazing man. And he had been to Africa, and honestly, like, we're probably in like the third ring in terms of things that he's passionate about philanthropically, but he's just got a lot. And so we're friends. We've become friends, and I care about the things that he cares about. And he just got back from Africa, and one of the ministries he's investing in there, and heard all about that. And an hour went by, and hadn't talked about Ministry Ventures. And finally he said, Mike, we're here to talk about Ministry Ventures a little too. He said, and he tells me, he's like, I just want to let you know I'm planning on doing $10,000 this year. And of course he'd given 20 the last 2 years. And in this moment, I was like, what do I do? And I planned on 20. But I want to be grateful. What should I do? So I just, there's this flare prayer, Lord, give me wisdom to know what to do. And I said, thank you so much for that, Drayton. I said, I got to be honest, I was planning on asking you to do $20,000 again like you did the last 2 years. But would you consider doing that again? And then I shut up. And he looked at me completely flabbergasted, like he had forgotten that he'd done 20 the last 2 years, okay? He really thought he'd done 10. And so he's like, yeah, I'll do 20. I was like, whoa, okay. You know, that 30 seconds of awkward just got me $10,000 more, okay? And so I guess what I want to encourage you is, as much as people love what we do and are excited about it and are energized by it, and when we tell our stories and all of those things that are good, people tend to respond to being asked. So we need to challenge and encourage personally, and when we model that for others, this funding plan thing that we talked about earlier is such a big deal. You know why it's a big deal? Because then everybody sees their own role in it. Okay, so when your funding plan is really clear, as board members, the board is responsible for $50,000 of this $500,000 pie. And we're gonna need your help to do this. It's like, oh, okay, well, I don't have to do it all. I don't have to do, you know, like, okay, like we can own that. You can equip them to own that. If everybody sees what their role is, there's something in there. We got some questions here, a couple other things you wanted to share. I try to have at least five either prospective donors or current donor interactions a week. And I spend the majority of my day on Tuesday, Wednesday, and a half day on Thursday focused on that. I spend half my time as executive director asking people for money.
And I want to tell you, he sent me a text that day he had the meeting, the lunch meeting. He said, you said something about you were all in the inside, like shaking or nervous, like you didn't know. So, like, even though he's been doing this a long time, we still get nervous on asking, guys. It's a big deal for Mike to say, will you give an extra 10? That took a lot. But, hey, we got it. So here's the thing, guys. Andy Stanley says you can potentially be the best in your field without a coach, but you can only be the best with a coach. So just quickly, I kind of want to tell you a little bit about Ministry Ventures and what we do in case you want to engage with us. So the reason Mike goes out and fundraises is so that we can offer our coaching affordable. Lots of people do fundraising coaching. They do board development coaching, but it's expensive, and I know because I've had to pay for some of it. So here at Ministry Ventures, we are blessed that we can offer this at a really affordable rate. Let me just kind of skip. Go back this way. So we have a program called Virtual Group Coaching, and I don't want to spend a ton of time, but I want to let you guys know in case you're interested. So it's a 7-month program. And think of it as kind of on demand. We have 45 modules that are all centered around board development, fundraising, prayer culture, healthy leadership. It's really dynamic. So your entire team has access to these modules, and they're impactful, they're empowering. Your coach meets with you once a month. You're part of a group. So if you engage with Ministry Ventures, we pair you up with 15 to 20 other leaders, and we meet once a month virtually. So you just sit in front of your computer. It's really easy. There's a time of teaching. We work issues together. We collaborate. We encourage each other. But also you have assignments and the funding plan, the donor care plan, board development, roles. Those are all part of your assignments. Now, I want you to hear me in that this is not going to take a ton of your time if you decide to do it. We say 3 to 4 hours a month. If you can give us that, you're going to see a big return. The average person that goes through our program on our statistics is 25% or more increase in fundraising. I just had a girl message me last week. She's raised 600% more in 1 year after going through the program. So last year, we served over 450 leaders all across the globe, even internationally through virtual group coaching, and it's a lot of fun. So our next session, I wanted to let you guys know, is the September 26th, our director of coaching, Beth Bennett. It's our last session for the year, so if you guys feel like you need some help in this area, not just with fundraising, but perhaps how to share your story more compelling, more effectively, how to get your board fired up about these things. Beth Bennett, our director of coaching, is leading this next cohort, and you're going to be with other leaders, like I said, who get your world. It is really awesome that Mike has given us, you guys are going to get $400 off. So if you enroll, it's $1,600 for the 7-month session. And Mike has given it, that's if people pay up front, it's typically $1,800. So Mike has given us a discount for Teen Challenge for $400 off. So guys, just something to consider without being too sales pitchy. We're just passionate about what we do. We love encouraging leaders, equipping you, because it's all to build the kingdom. You know, without these resources, we can't do what we do. So I want to take some time, questions about anything that comes to mind.
All right, you have a question?
Yes.
Yeah, great question. So I have a group in my cell phone that are tagged donors. And so when I'm driving, before I hop in the car, I'll kind of queue up a list of some donors to call. You know what's funny is pretty much people don't answer their phone, which is sneaky awesome. because I can leave them a voicemail and say hi and touch them and not have to have an extended conversation with them. It's not that I don't want to talk to them. If I do catch them, that's a win. But I can say something like, hey, you came to mind this week, and I just wanted to touch base and say thank you. I just had this amazing interaction with a ministry leader, and none of it would be possible without your support. Thank you so much. I have a prayer list for donors and things that I'm praying, and sometimes I'll text and just say, hey, how's it going with Marie, you know, or what have you, and I'll touch them that way. I'll try to get a face-to-face conversation with every donor during the year. And for those that tend to give more, I tend to try to touch them another time. But I'm trying to touch them. Our email blast counts as a touch to me. You know, if we send out a quarterly paper newsletter and they get it, that counts. And so I have a list of all the donors, and I have a sense of where it's going. It's funny, because I'm a numbers person, you'd think I'd be super systematic about it, but it's much more of a feel thing on this side for me. I just look at the donors and I just say, okay, yeah, I need to get with this guy. I have a virtual assistant that some people I know they're hard to get, and so I'll sic her on their assistant, and sometimes it's just easier to make something happen that way. Good question. Yep. No, great question. So when I was a wealth manager, what prompted me to give to other organizations? I tended to give to organizations that I was passionate about and that somebody asked me. So I grew up in China, right? And 2 years ago, my wife and I were looking at our giving, and you know what was funny? We gave more to organizations connected to Bulgaria, which I've never been. Honestly, don't really care much about Bulgaria. Not that, like, I don't want to see. And zero to China. You know why? Because two people from Bulgaria asked me to give to their organization. Shame on me for not being intentional, but I think it proves the point. Another question. In the back. Yeah, great question. So where do our donors live? Are they near us or far away? 85% of our donors, I would say, are either in Atlanta, which is where the ministry was originally based, Birmingham, which is where I am now, or in South Florida, where we've had a very significant historic ministry presence. And so those are the three main pockets of donors. There are times when somebody has given to the ministry and then subsequently moved away. And so we have a major donor, for instance, in Dallas, and try to get with him outside. But proximity is important. Face-to-face is the most powerful way to engage someone in giving. Good question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great question. New donor or new prospective donor, how many times do you want to touch them before you ask? It's a feel thing for me. Last January, I met with somebody. I very rarely do this, but I met with him. He seemed really engaged and excited about what we're doing. We had a match. This is why matches are so powerful, because they create a deadline and they create urgency. And so I shared with him, I said, hey, you know, I almost never ask somebody the first time I connect with them if they'd like to get involved financially with our ministry, but you seem really interested in what we're doing, and I want to make you aware of an exciting opportunity that we have. And I said, you know, through the rest of this month, we're working on this project, and we have a generous donor who's offered to match. And I said, we've got $5,000 left on this match. Will you help me? And he said, yes. And we got to check that next week. So thank you very much. This concludes the official time. We're going to be here up front. If you have any questions, I know I got to release those of you that are needing to release. But I'll answer questions as long as y'all are here. So feel free to. I know you have places to be. Go ahead. Next question. Donor base, do you go through the yellow pages? What is it that you're looking through? We're working, if you're able to stay for the next session, you'll get a lot of that. It's where to find your next 20 donors is the next session. I'll unpack that a lot more. It's being a networker and engaging in those ways. So lots of old-fashioned networking.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much.
David.